Awesome. That mask looks great. Is that mine? Sweet. Well, it's yours now. You have it on.
Uh-oh. All right. Somebody made an Easter mask for you?
No, it's not an Easter mask. It's just she's making masks this morning for all of us because I felt odd not being but being out in the public without a mask on yesterday. So,
who is this? Your wife or your daughter?
My wife.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I have a bandana that I tie up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
better than nothing.
It is better than nothing, certainly. And I still stay 6 feet away.
Me too.
Did you guys?
Excuse me. I have levels of mask. I have a paper mask, and I have an N95 mask, and then I have a cloth mask.
How did you get an N95 mask, Patrick? What the hell?
one of the peoples in Hannah's apartment building, she had some, and she gave Hannah and I both one each.
You should give those to the hospitals, dude.
Uh-huh.
We used them, so oops.
That's all right.
Oh well. But we're reusing them. We're never gonna throw those away, obviously, and but yeah, we got one set. We got one set, and those are our, those are what we just wore to the grocery store. And everybody at the grocery store, even the grocery store, was requiring you to wear face covering when you enter. And you are not allowed to have reusable bags now.
Yeah.
Man.
LA County's serious about that shit, man.
Yeah. They're really cracking it down. So hopefully it helps.
That's what it's going to take.
Hopefully it improves.
We do this for a month or two and things will get back to normal.
Hopefully. No,
they will. I mean, it's just, that's science, bro. You do it for a month or two and things get back to normal. That's how it works.
It's science, bro.
It's science, bro. Science.
That science, is the bro. Name of this podcast.
It's science, bro.
I love
science,
it.
Bro.
Hello and welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Patrick Schmaltz, with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Greetings and salutations.
And hello, Andrew Schmaltz.
Good morning, dear listeners.
Good morning,
Andrew, Patrick.
Yep.
Happy Easter.
We're recording this on Easter, Sunday, April 12th. This is episode number 135. Happy Easter. Happy Easter. We don't normally like do stuff on holidays like this, but we had nowhere to go.
You're quick enough. You're now close enough that you and Hannah could have driven here yesterday.
I was talking about that with her yesterday. I was like, you know, if this all wasn't going on, would we have driven to Phoenix? And like Hannah was like, I don't go home for Easter. I was like, I don't know, but like, I'm just so close.
You are.
Yeah, you're just 6 hours close. Away. You're six
That's
hours
there's
away.
There's no excuse anymore, dude. You can
get in the car.
You don't have to take a plane.
I was always like in a plane. I was always like a plane ride away or like 2 driving days away. So.
And now you're a half day away. You guys can get up at breakfast and be at mom and dad's for lunch. So
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so weird, but like obviously not happening now with the, you know, dystopic future. So I had this moment of
the future is bright, dude. We'll get through.
The future is very
hold
bright.
On. I had this moment at the grocery store today where I'm standing in the vegetable aisle. You know, I'm picking out potatoes, and
I did the same thing.
The manager comes on the intercom and he says, Albertsons would like to thank you for practicing social distancing. And he had this like very professional, very like, you know, I mean, these guys are doing a great job, so I don't want to knock him too hard. But it just took me to like Fahrenheit 451, like the overlord speaking to you. He's like, thank you for practicing social distancing. Please follow the guidelines of the new order, and these are the rules set for our society now.
Big brother loves you.
I mean,
trust the party.
Yeah,
trust what's the line from 1984? I mean, I've only read it once in college, but there's some line. God, it's like, Big Brother loves you, trust the party, something like that.
Yeah. It's all about, you know, trusting your government.
Patrick, you've never read 1984?
I never read. I put it on the list like a long time ago for my. I mean, fuck. I've never read it.
That. I mean, I've only read it once, I don't really.
You know, I haven't purchased an Audible book lately, so I might have
best book to read it with your psychological kind of well-being this time around, you know, this middle of a pandemic may not be
okay. So you're bringing up a good point. Lately Hannah and I have been craving, I say this last time, we've been watching very light fare,
completely
fun Ash adventure and I have been doing movies the same thing. That are like checkout movies. They're nothing serious, nothing about life or death. There's drama, but there's not like, you know, not real stories. Like, I don't want to watch Contagion. I was scrolling through Prime and I don't understand people who want to watch
Contagion. Like, I have no desire to watch a movie that's like,
I have no desire to watch
it's like hyper real about what's going on.
Yes.
I have no desire to do that. You watch Contagion?
Yep.
You watch
Let's
it?
See. Is that the one with
Lord Jude Law? Is that Soderbergh?
That's Soderbergh.
That's Matt Damon. Yeah.
Yes. It's an incredible movie. Yep.
Yeah. It's an incredible movie.
I watched it, and my wife and daughter were horrified that I was watching.
Seriously horrified.
Yep.
at least Outbreak is kind of ridiculous.
Outbreak is ridiculous. Contagion is freaking real, dude.
No, yeah, totally scary. Is real.
We're
real.
Living it.
We're not living it. Get out of here. The mail's still getting delivered.
It's all degrees, dude. It's all degrees.
The mail's still getting delivered. The trash is still getting picked up. People are still painting my apartment.
Christopher, what comes to mind when I think of like dystopic futures is like 1984, obviously, and like Fahrenheit 451. Like what are other ones?
Well, that's a great that's a good topic for discussion. What is the best or like your favorite kind of version of the dystopic
road?
The road. Oh, yeah? Well, okay. No, that's like, so I would put the road in the post-apocalyptic. Dystopic future is like,
you're right. The road is more post-apocalyptic.
This is a distinction. Is like dystopic future is like society is still functioning, but like. Something happened.
The worst possible version of it.
Right. The government is like pushing down on the citizens, and something happened. V for Vendetta is like a good example of this. It's like,
the authoritarian, ultra conservative, ultra religious version of the UK that emerges after a plague.
The best dystopia novel I've ever read is A Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've never read A Handmaid's Tale. Mike,
you need to read that, dude.
I downloaded it.
That's the best one of all time.
No shit.
Okay.
Yep.
What's the best dystopic, you know, kind of on screen you've ever seen? That you know, that it just for some reason just makes sense to you, or is the best version, you know, we shouldn't say best about dystopic, but it's fiction. So like people overlook it, but it's an interesting version of the future is Equilibrium. And it's kind of post-apocalyptic because society has collapsed. And I mean, but even would we consider like Dread?
Oh yeah,
not the shitty Sylvester Stallone version, the awesome Carl Urban version.
God, I want to watch that again. I wish they had made like six of those.
My favorite dystopian movie is Children of Men.
Oh yeah, well that's the best.
See, the monikers of like a good dystopic future is like something catastrophic has happened to society where like government needs to like crack down and things are like society is starting to like fall apart in such a way. And it's not necessarily like bleak, like there is no society.
It hasn't gone full like Road Warrior style.
Yeah, not Road Warrior, not, you know, Mad Max stuff, not, you know.
I mean, the best post-apocalyptic movie I think ever is Mad Max Fury Road. I think you can't
Oh wow.
really dispute
you're
that.
Going, you're going like the best post-apocalyptic. I mean, people have been talking about like I Am Legend a lot lately too. Like there's a lot of,
because I really like the Will Smith I Am Legend, actually. I think it's a good movie.
It's pretty good. There's arguments about the end being kind of campy and weird, and like him sacrificing himself is strange. And
there's multiple versions of that, of the end of that movie. Actually, yeah, they tested it with a different ending, and the test didn't play as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So, no, I like that movie a lot. Actually, it's a good movie.
Will it's Smith used to be shit.
Will Smith used to be very watchable. What has happened to him? He has gone off the deep end.
What are you talking about?
I don't. I mean, well, did you see that? Did you see that Gemini Man crap? I didn't see
just because I heard it was crap. But he can carry anything, dude. Come on.
Yeah. No.
Snowpiercer? What about Snowpiercer?
Oh, that's a great one. Like, I mean, that's like we really.
Made by the same guy who made fucking Parasite.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Come on.
Hey, really, I'm looking at some lists, and do you think Blade Runner is a dystopian novel?
Oh, yeah. Movie? 100%. Oh yeah, it's a
I don't know if it's dystopian.
I think Blade Runner 2049 is more dystopian than the original Blade Runner, because they prefaced the idea that there was some kind of terrible collapse of society, mm-hmm. and that led to
Blade Runner is a like there's a lot of this too, where it's like the big corporation kind of runs like government, like in the background. There is no like government, like the corporation is like in charge of the society.
Well, it's it predicted the kind of hyper urbanization that has happened in the 21st century, where
they have like walls around the city too. Like something happened to the
outside. That isn't directly addressed in the original Blade Runner. That's an aspect
change,
of 24.
Dude.
That's
the wall
climate
around
change.
The
that's
city 20- is to keep the ocean out.
Exactly.
Right.
So there was some
Talk about this movie. This movie is incredible. It is. I love this movie. It's not really a good movie, but damn, I love this movie. They Live.
Oh yeah.
Shit. I've actually never seen
John Carpenter. Oh my God. With
not necessarily the dystopic future, more like conspiracy theory, like aliens are running the world behind
right.
the scenes.
Right. I mean, it's more of an attack on modern sort of economic.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff. There's a lot of like interesting nuance to that movie. That you're bringing up John Carpenter is like Escape from New York. Very dystopic future. Like New York has become like a prison island. It's gotten so bad that it became they just walled it off and it became like a prison.
Yeah.
Prison Island. Government overlord. Looper is pretty good.
Ryan Johnson, he's a genius.
He really is a genius.
He's pretty good. It's pretty good. All right. Well, I mean, those are pretty good. I just had those thoughts at the grocery store today, and I thought it would be like an interesting idea to society is gonna continue, but I'm just worried about these rules and things being here forever.
Part of me thinks that it's just going to make good sense. I mean, Ashton and I actually talked about it earlier this week. It's part of the societal norm in hyper dense urban areas in, you know, the East or whatever, the East, quote unquote, the East, because everything has to be as to where the West originates. In China and stuff like that, you know, Shanghai and Tokyo, you see people wearing masks all the time. Just as a normal course of going into public.
Yeah.
The hyper density of the population, that's a good, it's smart way to live. I think that will become more of the norm, at least for the foreseeable future. Just people in masks in public, as a precaution. I can see that being a thing.
In our Western society, I think absolutely that's going to be a commonplace thing from now on. Like,
I still hear anecdotal things about people like getting chastised, like people that are afraid or however they're reacting to seeing somebody in masks saying, "Why are you wearing a mask? You're scaring me. Why, you know, if you're sick, stay home." You know, people are still like
not anymore, man. Like,
oh, I know, but it's
wearing. Yeah, if someone's wearing a mask out, I feel like that.
That's being responsible. I feel that way, but other people
being responsible. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that the society mind will see it that way.
You wonder if We've had this conversation before about smoking in public. You wonder if our norms are going to evolve to the point where during events like this, or during sort of just a normal sort of everyday, it will be weird, you know, during flu season, for example, we will look upon people who aren't wearing a mask as odd. Yeah. Same way we react to people who smoking is so much the sort of taboo these days that I do a double take when I see people smoking.
Yeah.
And it might be the same kind of evolution of our society is that during flu season, people are wearing masks all the time.
Yeah. What I'm
and there's, most... I mean, there's laws in the books that say that you cannot wear masks.
Yeah.
In public gatherings.
I think of that. Like, I've thought of that when I was out in public this week wearing a bandana, and I thought to myself, how is security adjusting, like going to a Target? How is security adjusting their, you know, they're however they view people, you know, they can't see your face.
Yeah.
You know, that is like right now, that's a sign that you're going to commit a crime. Or before, you know, it was the pandemic idea. Wearing a mask means you're trying to hide your identity, not you're trying to be, you're taking a precaution against infection.
Well, it's I don't want to call the person out or anything, but like I went to the grocery store and I obviously am not under 21. Just like little stuff like this, though. It's like I'm over 21. We bought alcohol in our grocery run and they didn't ask me to pull my mask down to make sure I was like, you know, obviously they can see my hairline and I'm, you know, I'm fine. But like if there's some kid who's trying to buy alcohol, does he have to pull his mask down to show his face and show his ID? Like what? Like,
stuff all those like things are ever evolving, it seems.
Just
like.
Right, just little stuff like that too. It's like you're talking about like someone going into a bank with a mask on. Absolutely, it's like that guy. Like now, it's like commonplace. But like in the future, if someone wears a mask into a bank, are they going to tell them to take it off?
Definitely going to have to be some kind of adjustment of security procedure to allow for. Absolutely. But you're right. I mean, but I mean, I had an interaction where once upon a time I was at a soccer match and people were wearing masks and there was, you know, it's just how the soccer fans were the Phoenix Rising, like kind of supporters club. They call themselves the Banditos or something like that. And they wear masks at the match. And it's like, okay, they're allowed in this situation at the soccer match or surrounding areas, but like wearing a mask in public would get you met with suspicion. Why are you hiding your identity? Stuff like that. What I am hopeful for, and I think it will be a sign that society has gotten back to quote unquote normal, is when sporting events are going to be played and you have, you know, 50,000 people in an arena.
That's going to be one of the key indicators, right? People are willing to show up. Yeah.
Here's three things that I'm really disappointed about this month that I was excited about. April, they had the LA Renaissance Festival that I was going to go to.
Oh yeah.
Really excited about that, and that's not happening.
Where do they hold that?
It's a little town east of here. It was like, it's like 45 minutes east of where I am right now. I don't know the town. It's like a little suburb. I looked it up and now I'm blanking on the name of it, but it's like a, you know, big open grassy field area, I'm sure. And there's none of that around here. So, and then I was excited about the LA Comic Con was supposed to be in April, I think.
Yeah.
I was excited about that. Not happening.
Phoenix Comic Con got pushed. Usually it's at the end of May.
Yeah, it's usually May.
They pushed it to September.
Fuck. Yeah. And you guys were talking about coming out to Disneyland in April. That didn't happen. Christopher's birthday happened last week.
My 50th birthday came and went.
And we didn't do anything. Okay. No. Honestly, Christopher, like store that away for when this all goes away.
Oh, yeah.
We absolutely need to do something. Don't forget about it. I'm not going to forget about it. We need to do something.
Chris won't forget about it. It's his 50th birthday.
I know. It's your 50th and we didn't do anything
You should join. I mean, Sean and I are going to do this and you are absolutely welcome to join. But to commemorate 50, we're going to do a day hike in the canyon. We're going to go down to the river and out in a single day.
I'm down. I'm so down for that. That I'm,
Andrew,
I'm,
if you want to do it too, you're in.
I mean, that has no appeal to me whatsoever. But, I mean, going hiking down to the canyon sounds fantastic. I absolutely want to do that. Doing it in a day just to test myself physically sounds absolutely no. But
that's what I'm doing because a combination of reminding. Anyway, it's about reminding myself I'm alive and also giving me perspective.
It's like 2 or 3 hours in, and then it's like 7 hours out or something.
Five to seven out.
Yeah.
Out? Wow.
Yeah, it's, dude, it's...
It must be, it must be like...
Every park poster, every park notices, do not try this in a single day. So we're going to do it.
Okay. Yeah. No, yes. Thanks. No, I'm okay.
We're doing it.
I understand. Have fun. Patrick brought up Disneyland, and I mean, that's still going to happen. But 100%. I actually got in a long discussion. Ash and I did. We did like a 6 mile hike yesterday, and we got part of it. We were discussing when Disneyland reopens. We saw something online about how they're going to take every person's temperature before allowed in, and I wonder if we just kind of tried to how would that feasibly work and. That doesn't really stop people from who are carriers and aren't showing symptoms. How will they control crowd size? How will they
lines?
Exactly.
How do you deal with lines?
How do you deal with lines? All that things. And people are still going to want to do these things, but the extra precautions are going to be in place for the foreseeable future. I don't think
Disneyland is going to be safe until there's a treatment.
You think?
I think huge crowds like that. Places like that are likely to be very sparse. Even if they reopen, I think that people are not going to be comfortable until there's a
shot. Solid. I think there is a segment of people, that will take the risk. The young,
no question. Yeah. I mean, there are people gathering in places now, right now as we speak, because they're
Disneyland. It has its own risks for sure, but like. Disneyland's open air, and I feel like it's less dangerous than a closed system, like having a convention indoors. Like those are the things that I feel like are going to take longer. Like going to a basketball game in a closed arena, like that seems more likely to take longer to come back. Like I feel like basketball is going to come back, but necessarily they don't. Like they have the stadiums, but they don't open it to the public or something. They play the games, but it like no.
The NFL when that. I mean,
yeah.
People, whether or not I think that Americans are so American that when the NFL comes back, people will still buy tickets and go to the games.
Oh sure,
and yeah. People will get sick because they'll just get sick. But
yeah,
the NFL season will start. I think on time because the NFL is the NFL and nothing will stop the NFL from being played. And people will still buy tickets.
I hope you're right.
I think the major population density cities, the casual fan who will just be like, oh, let's go to a game on Sunday, like at, in LA or in New York or like Chicago or whatever, those people will stay home. Just like, it sounds terrible to say it, but just like the casual kind of moviegoers didn't go see The Dark Knight Rises after the shooting. Because they were kind of like scared to go to a movie theater, but it still had a humongous opening weekend.
God, think about that. Like movie theaters, like people were, they weren't allowing people to wear like cosplay to what was that movie that just came out that they were
The Joker.
Yeah. That's right.
It's a different situation in terms of levels of fear. Certainly.
Right.
I miss going to the movies. That is something thing that I really miss. I go to the movies once a week usually.
For sure.
Hannah and I were going at least once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks.
I remember before they were building. I told you guys they're building a theater within walking distance, like a bar theater.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Roadhouse Cinemas right around the corner from me, and I was gonna go to that place. If I could afford it, I was going to go there at least once a week. I wanted to keep that place open.
I mean, this is just on everybody's mind. And sorry, listeners, if we're just talking about, but we're talking about geeky stuff that affects us with this stuff. Anyways, but like I'm curious about like bars and stuff, like little businesses that are going to struggle to stay open and like whether like that is, those places are not going to ever reopen. Like big stuff, like grocery stores and like big businesses, like they're gonna keep going. Macy's folded. All these little bar mom and pop restaurants.
Well, I mean, local places are doing. I mean, they're doing takeout. Like my local lookout tavern is doing takeout to kind of like keep some income going. But all their servers are laid off. They don't have any kind of income.
Those things are have so much overhead, Andrew. And to like,
oh
to,
no, I understand.
Like, there's no way that he's if anything, he's just like the money he's going into the hole every single month.
I don't disagree with that, dude.
Like he's just like all that takeout is just like is eating away at how big the hole he's going into is.
Well,
like
and it's probably is he bought all this stock and he had just rather than take 100% of the loss, he's taking less of the percentage of the loss because he's selling some of it.
Yeah,
because he can't just, you know, it's not going to keep forever. He's going to have to throw out. He bought 100 pounds of chicken. And you know what? The chicken needs to be eaten or it'll just get thrown away. So if he sells 30 pounds of it.
There's a restaurant down the street from us does like tacos. And they actually have a pantry section on their website now where you can buy some of their overstocked. That was a week ago. I don't know if they're still doing that. I think
people cracked down on that because they weren't licensed to be grocers. So
really?
Oh, I heard a little bit about that. Huh. Anyway. How are we escaping from all of this? What have we been watching and playing and reading and to kind of escape from this? Patrick mentioned the lighter fare. I actually restarted. I haven't watched it since it originally premiered, and it's kind of fun to go back because Ashton and I recently watched Endgame again. We hadn't watched it. You know, I maybe watched it once or twice since it premiered last year around this time. She hadn't watched it in probably a couple of months. So we watched Endgame. I actually have restarted Daredevil season one, which I haven't watched since it's an original premiere on Netflix.
Solid.
It is so good. And it has that has that feeling of early Marvel movies, like phase one Marvel movies, where they're still trying to figure everything out. Like, what is this going to be? And how is this going to fit into a larger universe?
Because even one season Daredevil one, has such good action and such good
the fight scenes are still awesome. So revisiting the early Netflix Marvel, I might watch all of Daredevil and then I'll watch all of Jessica Jones. I'll watch Iron Fist. Who knows?
That show was so hard to watch sometimes because he gets his ass whooped so much.
In the first season, he really does.
And he's like so bruised up and bloody. And it's like, oh my God, this is like, it's so brutal.
It's
like
a brutally violent show.
It's really brutally violent. And it's so good. I like that it's like that. But like, I remember
Charlie Cox is perfect as Matt Murdock, as Daredevil. He is so good. We talk about the casting of Marvel really having there's maybe one or two missteps. The guy that cast as Iron Fist is a notable misstep, but
I feel like they need to bring Jessica Jones and Daredevil, these same actors and characters into the Marvel universe. I would love to see them on the big screen with like standing next to, I would love to see Daredevil and Spider-Man team up.
That would be fun.
Because they do that all the time in the comics. They're both in New York, and I think that be a fun thing. Like Punisher and Daredevil do like a thing in season two, and then Punisher. Did you watch any of the Punisher, Andrew? I never watched.
Oh, I watched all of the Punisher.
I did too. Yeah.
Was it good? Was it good?
Even more brutal.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh God.
That's dystopian, dude. Watching that is dystopian.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel about that.
He is the definition of anti-hero. So.
Oh yeah. The Punisher that they create in the Marvel TV unit, Marvel Netflix universe,
is super dark
and totally motivated by his absolute just embracing complete revenge. He is fueled by post-traumatic anger and he lets it out and he is capable of anything.
Yep.
He's able to focus it because, you know, he's a good man, but he embraces the very darkest parts of himself.
speaking of rewatch and rewatching or watching for the first time, Hannah has never read or seen any of the Harry Potter movies. She hasn't read the books, so she doesn't know anything. She's basing this solely on film, which I feel like that is, she's like,
sorry.
Okay, what the hell was Christopher leaned on? What's something that?
She's chiming in. I'm gonna die shortly. So.
Oh okay. No. She just came in. She heard me talking about her. The movies and books have never been spoiled for her. She doesn't know who anyone dies.
How did she avoid that?
I have no idea. They were the biggest things
in pop culture the years they were released.
She doesn't know any ending. She doesn't know what happens at all. She knows nothing. And so we're watching them. Watching them with fresh eyes with someone who has no idea about the deeper plots. It's really interesting because I feel like I've never met anybody who watches movies who hasn't read the books. Like it's bizarre. So we just watched the past couple of days we watched Prisoner of Azkaban, and last night we watched
Goblet of Fire.
Oh yeah. My god.
Yeah, and that's all she's seen. She doesn't know anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you watch Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets?
Oh yeah. She had watched Sorcerer's Stone like years ago, and she's like, these are kids' movies, and they are absolutely kids' movies. Yeah, three is where it really turns the page.
Well, they hired Alfonso Cuarón, who is a legitimately. Yeah. Talented filmmaker who
and the look different... of it is very different, very different than the other movies. And then the fourth one starts the trend of like it looking like a certain kind of film.
Yeah.
And
well, the same guy directed 5, 6, 7, and 8.
I thought he directed Steven... 4 too, but I don't think that's
no,
right.
No, Mike Nichols directed 4. Yeah. God, what's his name? I can't remember his name now. But he directed 5, 6, 7, and 8, the same guy.
Yeah, 5, 6, 7, and 7.5.
Yeah, 7 part 2.
And then he also has been directing the Fantastic Beasts movies, right? That same guy?
Yeah, same guy. He's made a career out of directing Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. I mean, each of them make $1 billion, so I would imagine.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's funny that you bring up watching things for the first time, and you saw the evidence of it yesterday because we were buying it on your Amazon account. Ashton has never seen any of the Mission Impossible movies, and she brought up watching an action movie, and these days when I think of an action movie, my favorite action movie is Fallout. It's so good.
That's a very, very solid movie.
So I thought to myself, we'll get her started, and I made the executive decision that we could start with Mission Impossible 3 because that really starts the kind of connected plot thread of Ethan Hunt and his wife. And that kind of starts that arc for him.
Cause you didn't want to watch 1 and 2. I mean,
we could watch 1 and 2, but I think you get sucked in more to Ethan Hunt as a character in Mission Impossible 3. Like he's not a character in Mission.
I guess I agree. I have no way of like, I'm just a completionist who's like, why wouldn't
you? Oh, no, and I don't disagree with that. I think we'll eventually watch 1 and 2, but I don't think you have to watch 1 and 2 to appreciate 3.
I think 1 is I honestly haven't watched it in probably 10 years, but like 1 is like a solid spy movie. Like
very. I agree.
The later ones have turned into like straight up like action adventure gunfight movies, but
I think I agree with that. If you rewatch Rogue Nation, though, that is a much more in the shadows kind of spy movie. It does have its big
Rogue Nation piece. Is really good. You rented those, right? Like
on Amazon,
yeah. How long do they last on Amazon? 48 hours.
Yeah, 48.
I might have to watch Rogue Nation because I don't think I've seen that one.
Rogue Nation has that awesome sequence when he's climbing the outside of the building.
Think about this, like Rogue Nation, and then Ghost Protocol, and then Fallout.
Ghost Protocol has the climbing on the outside of the building.
Which one's Rogue Nation then? Rogue Nation's the one where the Kremlin blows up.
No, that's Ghost Protocol.
That's Ghost Protocol?
Yeah. Rogue Nation is the first movie where we meet Ilsa Faust. That's where, like,
okay, so I'm flipping the orders then. So it's Ghost Protocol.
Rogue Nation is the dive and the hold your breath thing.
Yeah.
That's a really good movie.
That one's the weakest of the three, though. I think that I really liked Ghost Protocol, the stuff with Jeremy Renner's in Ghost Protocol.
He's in Rogue Nation too. He has more action in Ghost Protocol, but
he's just like a staffer in Rogue Nation.
Yeah, he talks into phones a lot.
Yeah,
I like Jeremy Renner though.
I think they're all strong movies. I think they definitely have their high points.
Yeah, Fallout though is the best one of
the new four for sure.
The new four, and
I have that on
Blu-ray,
so
because it's a sequel. It's like fourth sequel. I mean, how many damn movies is it? Six movies now. It's the sixth one, and I would say that's the best of the six.
I don't disagree with that assessment, I think. I think Fallout is the best of the six.
It's the most fun and watchable, and that's partial to Henry Cavill is a great spoiler.
Heavy. Yeah, heavy bad guy. Yeah, he's menacing.
He's menacing, and he cocks the biceps.
It's so fun.
I want it.
Funny.
That bathroom fight is so fun, dude.
The
it's
bathroom
so good.
Fight is yeah. so good.
It is.
All right.
Are you rewatching anything to pass the time in quarantine, Christopher?
The only thing I'm rewatching is I started DS9.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yep. DS9, great.
Yeah.
So are you starting
I'm working
with like
my
season
way
one?
Through season like, one of DS9.
Season one is pretty poopy. It's when I think it's season three, the TNG ends, all the writers come over to Deep Space Nine, and then season three is where it starts to really like they have better episodes.
Well, they ramp up ramp up the threat of the Dominion. You finally embrace that, and like it's always in whispers in seasons one and two, like the discovery of going through the wormhole, and then season three is when they really start to explore what the Dominion is, and you find out who the founders are and all that shit. That's when it really ramps up, and then I think doesn't the Dominion War lasts like an entire season of like season five or six. Like it's a whole
war
story.
Seasons, did they do seven seasons of Deep Space Nine?
I think they did. Yeah.
Well, then the Dominion War doesn't end till the end of season seven, because I remember they invade Cardassia.
That's right. Or they take over Cardassia. Cardassia is like their ally.
Cardassia is their ally. The Federation and the Romulans and the Klingons show up to Cardassia to fight the Dominion and get the founders, and then they cure the founders of the weird like illness they have. Yeah, there's some
Patrick,
crazy.
Are you spoiling things, Christopher? Have you actually ever watched DS9?
Yeah, I have. Can
oh,
you
okay,
hear me?
Good.
I've watched it for sure.
Yeah, you were quiet there for a second. Did you drop off?
No, I could hear you. I was just adjusting my microphone setup because the amp that's part of my headset setup was gonna die, so I just I'm plugged directly into the computer now. So
cool.
Yeah. But yeah, do I sound okay?
You're a little hot.
You're a little hot.
Andrew, you're a princess podcaster. So,
I am a princess podcaster.
So I don't.
contender for the name of the episode.
It's Science Bro or Andrew is a princess podcaster.
The princess podcaster and in the Science Bro. That's
and it's Science Bro.
So, oh yeah, I watched DS9 when it first came out. So but I've never like done a rewatch of it ever. Like I've rewatched TNG and original Star Trek couple times. But I've never rewatched DS9, so it's a hole in my Star Trek fandom. So
I don't think that's why I'm doing that. I've ever rewatched DS9 either. I think that
let me tell you what you're going to experience, Christopher. You're going to be so sick of hearing about the freaking Bajorans and their freaking lives,
dude. I'm already sick of that. So
that's what the most of season one is the Bajorans and all their internal conflicts.
Constant, yeah.
And they're just so. I get that they've gone through something like harsh, and like the Kardashians are a bunch of assholes. But like
Kardashians, you said Kardashians.
Those guys are assholes too. So yeah, it just like when you find another Kira Nerys episode and you're just like, oh god, okay, I get it. And then what's the okay, let's talk about the most annoying Star Trek characters ever. The character of the religious leader on Bajoran, what's her name, Andrew? You got this in your head. I know you do.
The Kai
something or other.
Yeah, she's like the Pope.
She's like the Pope of Bajor.
Yeah.
She is every episode. Kai Winn. When she is in an episode, I want to see
that
act.
You
want to
know what? I could use this for trivia, but that actress played Nurse Ratchet in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for that. Actress.
You know that I never knew Deanna Troi's mother. But Loxana Troi,
actress's name is Majel Barrett.
She was married to Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah,
and she's in the original series in a few episodes. Yep, I had no idea.
She's the voice of the Enterprise computer in Next Generation.
Yep,
that's right. That's right. Oh my god! So like, man, I'm you're talking about this. I'm still watching season one of there's 30 episodes in season one of Star Trek, the original series, like 30 damn episodes. So I'm still watching those, slowly but surely. But I would like to talk about something that they added to Netflix. That's a brand new show. That's kind of fun, but it's really short. So it's low commitment. It's only 8 episodes. Is The Letter for the King.
Okay. Oh my god, it's not good, dude.
It's not good? You didn't like it?
No.
I liked it. No. I thought it was fun. No.
I haven't watched it. Okay, give me the competing arguments. Patrick, you go first. Why is it good?
It's fantasy. There's some magic elements. There's a evil overlord guy. There's fun chase scenes. Some of the actors, there's a few fun twists in it that I like that I didn't see coming. I like the world building and it seems like everybody's having a good time and the costumes are good.
Nothing about what you said saying acting, writing, or
it's fantasy lame, dude.
Oh, it's great. Okay.
It's okay. Fantasy lame. I am so over teenage angst set in a fantasy setting. It is so dumb, dude. It's so dumb.
All the main characters are teenagers.
Okay. It is tropey trope, trope or trope.
It is tropey trope, trope or trope. This is true.
It is terrible.
Did you watch all of it though, Chris?
No. I did not watch all of it.
It was so bad you didn't even finish it?
I quit it.
Oh wow, that means that it's really bad.
Yes, because you know, I'm the fantasy guy of the trio,
100%.
And
you know what?
It's terrible.
You know
how deep did you get?
Episode 4.
Okay, so you gave it a decent chance.
I gave it a decent run.
That is a decent chance. If you can't hook somebody in 4 episodes of an 8 episode run, not great.
Nope.
You know what show?
You know what's worth watching is Tales from the Loop, dude. Holy shit! You need to watch that.
I watched the first 2 episodes and I was kind of like, "Oh my god,
it is ideas, man. It's ideas. It is." Anyway, it's
speaking of ideas.
I'm gonna keep on the rewatch.
We've talked about this for weeks. We need to sell Patrick on Westworld season 3.
They are four
episodes into season 3 and it is great.
It's a show, man. It's a show.
It is like, it's not like as good as Game of Thrones was in its height.
It's not even as good as
I mean, few things are ever going to be as good as Watchmen, I think. For that kind of
time. Here's how I'll sell you on the show. Did you like season 1 of Westworld, Patrick?
I love season 1 of Westworld.
Okay. Season 2 was hard to watch. I gutted that out cuz it was opaque as hell and not fun to watch. Season 3 is fun to watch and there are complex ideas at work.
Yes. Yeah,
so it is not as good as season 1. but it is a return to, we're going to try to entertain you a little bit. That's where,
and it has a mystery, and it has, you know, competing interests in this kind of, you know, in this main story arc, but it's not purposefully, it's not substituting being confusing for being like intricate. Like
season two was confusing at the sake of being trying to be mysterious. It was like, what the fuck is going on? And there was no joy to it whatsoever.
No joy.
Season two was devout of happiness. No one smiled for six episodes. Yeah. Devoid. Thank you. Yeah. Devoid of happiness. Yeah. And it was just such a slog.
Well, it doesn't have to be happy. It just has to be entertaining.
Exactly.
Right, right. I don't need happiness. And so I need interesting characters.
Yeah.
Even if you're totally opposed to the character. And so that's what season three really has me hooked, is that I am interested in every character on the screen all the time.
All right.
Like, that's exactly what you want.
I'm gonna shout out because Evan Rachel Wood as Dolores.
Holy shit, is she good?
She is 100% committed to what she's doing. Her Dolores is, she wants to destroy the human world.
I love her for it. And I don't want her to succeed. It's just,
you don't want
so
her to succeed at all, but you love watching her.
Yes.
She's so good.
I'm gonna find a YouTube recap of season two, because I'm not gonna finish.
I did not rewatch season two before season three. Watch a YouTube recap, and then watch season three.
And then I'm gonna start season three, and I will report back next week. We're gonna talk about Westworld into more detail.
Like I said, it's weekly, so I'm embracing the weekly event TV again, because Westworld is on Sunday nights, and I'm excited to watch TV on Sunday nights.
Me too.
I thought about that
when I woke up this morning. Oh, yeah. new Westworld today.
It feels so good, right? Yep, to have excited TV again to build up anticipation for.
We talked about this on Picard, is like, we like having, like, it's something different about our society where you could stream a whole season in a weekend. It's nice to have like a show a week, and it's like, that's nice. That's nice that you got like a good show that you can look forward to watching.
Yeah, I think give it a try, brother. I think you'll get sucked.
I'll give it a try. I'm also going to continue. I don't want to not talk about this, but like I'm gonna continue Tales from the Loop. I watched two episodes and I was kind of meh about it, but like you're saying it's pretty good. So I'm gonna keep.
It's weird. I mean, it's definitely weird. It's
weird science fiction.
I like it a lot.
Episode one was honestly, episode two was much better than episode one. I feel like their pilot episode was not great. Like,
there was nothing happening
for a long time, and I was just like, this little girl looking for her mother. What the fuck is this show? Like, I don't give a shit about this. So I'll give it more of a shot.
Do it.
What is this streaming on? Because I'll
Prime.
Give it a shot.
It's on Prime.
Prime.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a funny little question. Have either of you fired up CBS All Access since Picard ended?
No.
No.
Just wanted to say that. Okay. What else do I got on my list? I'm playing Skyrim again because, you know, Skyrim. Did either of you see Dark Phoenix?
I watched it when I was on HBO.
It's on HBO now.
That's the only time I saw it in theater. It's a big miss because that is my favorite X-Men arc.
Yep.
Legitimately one of the best arcs and best stories in all of comics.
The Phoenix is an incredible
Phoenix saga into the Dark Phoenix saga There's a few things I wanted to say about it.
I feel like there was definitely a lot more there that Sony should have explored, and they're definitely chicken shit. Like Jessica Chastain should have been the leader of the Shi'ar Empire. What was her name? The Empress?
Lilandra.
Lilandra. Andrew, you pulling that out of left field.
Andrew knows stuff.
Like I said, it's my favorite arc. And I mean,
Lilandra?
I'm sure I've read the original Chris Claremont graphic novel or assemblage of issues or whatever, but the 90s X-Men TV show.
Yeah,
the 12 episodes they did of the Phoenix into the Dark Phoenix saga.
Is that available on streaming?
It's on Disney Plus, dude.
Oh my god.
The X-Men is on Disney Plus, dude.
Holy shit, I gotta watch that.
Right?
I remember that it's so good.
Yeah, it's definitely a show for kids.
It's not going to hold up. It doesn't hold up
The Batman series definitely holds up. That is the best telling. I was saying this to Ashton when I was watching the movie. I'm like, they could have made an epic trilogy and Dark Phoenix sagas. It could have been Lord of the Rings level.
Yep.
3-hour epic, engaging.
If it was
all the character threads.
If it was Lilandra and the Gladiator that show up on Earth to kill Jean Grey,
yep.
That would have been the crazy, because it would have been like this.
That would have been an epic part three, dude. And all the back and forth of,
that's what I'm saying. It would have been this gray area villain where it's like, she just wants to destroy the Phoenix Force and she doesn't care who gets in her way.
Right.
Like, well, and the competing interest of Professor X loving Jean Grey and being protective and fatherly of her.
But she's also being corrupted by this
my point.
I'm sorry.
Professor X and also having this preternatural kind of intimate connection with Lilandra that eventually develops into a real love story for him.
Crazy.
Like, he would have those competing factions. It would have been even for James McAvoy or Patrick Stewart, it couldn't have been Patrick Stewart because he's 50 years older than Jessica Chastain.
If Marvel Comics had this right, they would have gone there. They would have gone full on space opera, alien show.
Absolutely
up.
Would have turned into a space opera. It would have been incredible.
Yeah. Especially after Guardians of the Galaxy hit. It would have made total sense. They could have, and they still could, I guess. But man, that's a absolutely right. A trilogy based on that would have been just freaking amazing.
Sophie Turner went on Twitter this week and said she wants to be in an MCU movie. She wants to continue playing Jean Grey, and I hope that they let her. Like honestly, I don't want them to recast the X-Men. I like who's playing.
I think they have to recast Wolverine.
They have to recast Wolverine because Wolverine can't be Hugh Jackman. He's too old. Sorry.
I think that you have to, whatever the chemistry was to make the Avengers work with all of those kind of, and they weren't humongous names when they were first cast. The biggest star was Robert Downey Jr. And even he wasn't the level star that he is now. Like where he literally attaches his name to something and like throw $100 million at him. To make fucking Doolittle, which made no money. But because he was attached to it, they just let him do it.
Giant, like.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he is now a name brand that gets movies made. But well, none of the Avengers were.
The guy made $75 million for it. They paid him $75 million.
I know, it's pretty wild. But anyway, think about that. I think they have to start over a little. Hugh Jackman is just too big of a star. I mean, he attach his name to something and it's instantly has credibility. He can't play Wolverine again.
Well, Ryan Reynolds being Deadpool, I love. I'm glad that he's going to be part of the MCU stuff too now, and I love that. I'm hoping that continues. But like, there's this overlap of the X-Men in there too that can happen. And
it's almost
I love like Fassbender. Fassbender playing Magneto is perfect.
Oh, he's great. And he's like the highlight of the relaunch of the X-Men is Fassbender as Magneto.
Oh yeah, New Mutants and the Days of Future Past and even to some extent Apocalypse is the worst of
it's pretty poopy.
But like New Mutants and Days of Future Past are so good. Like those and New Mutants.
It hasn't come out yet, dude. You're thinking of First Class.
I'm thinking of First Class. You're right. But First Class is like Fassbender murdering people as Magneto in like murdering Nazis and Meg, like so cool.
It's so fun. He's just watchable, man, and he makes it work.
he's like a high level, you know, actor. And so exactly. What else do I have on my list? Do you guys have anything else on your list?
Well, I mean, Chris and I have been playing a lot of Warzone, that's for sure.
Yes, yeah, we have.
How's that going? You guys have,
it's fun.
It feeds
my lizard brain, dude. I need lizard brain. That's all it feeds.
I have embraced the reality of the BR sensibility of you drop in, you play a 20-minute match, either you win, you know, and I've never won a match yet. I've gotten a couple of top tens, but it's so easy to just sit there and just play, you know, 4 or 5 matches in an hour or two and just totally check out.
It appeals to me because it requires intense focus.
Yes.
It is tense for those 20 minutes. And so everything else sort of bleeds away. It's gone where you are intensely focused on and engaged. Sort of, there's an endorphin hit when you get a good drop from a chest.
Yeah.
There's an endorphin hit when you get, you fulfill smoke a contract. There's an endorphin hit when you smoke fools. And it requires intense focus. And I love that tension.
You know,
and again, it's lizard brain.
This is 100%. I'm seeing a pattern in your gameplay, Chris. This is very similar to your Monster Hunter like itch that you would do. You drop in, you hunt down that one thing.
Yep.
You fight it for 40 minutes.
Yeah. 40 minutes. And then die.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's less feedback, positive feedback in Monster Hunter for sure. So
Right.
I have never been the type to embrace kind of like punishing games.
Yeah.
I mean, Warzone, it's punishing in its own way, is in the sense that you can last till the end of the game and have a really good match, or you can literally go out in 2 minutes if somebody gets the drop on you and you just don't.
But there's the thing about Warzone is that there's no negative consequences.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, there's negative consequences in Monster Hunter. You lose resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a pain in the ass. Warzone, there's even if you die 143rd, there is an incremental creep of your XP. A little bit of XP, right? So you're always gaining. It just depends on how much. So,
yeah, you're right.
I feel that every once in a while. Like I get that itch from, like, I guess, like, Overwatch is very similar to that, and even for some of that is like For Honor. But For Honor, if you stop playing For Honor for months and then come back to For Honor, like, you're gonna get worked. Like,
I couldn't get into like PUBG or Fortnite, because there's professional players out there, and everybody who plays has been playing for so long. At least Warzone has kind of that new sheen. I mean, I never really played Call of Duty before, but there isn't people who are like experts in the game who just...
I just don't think I really like...
It's okay, dude. You don't have to like it. We're digging on it right now.
No, I know. I think I like team gameplay, and I like More Than One Life, because it's sort of just... Like, I like the... If I'm playing multiplayer, I want it to be like a tactical like thing, instead of just like you run around this wasteland and try to find gear and then you die. And it's like, okay, well that I don't know.
Yeah, no, if it doesn't appeal to you, it doesn't appeal to you. But it's been appealing to Chris.
I like playing with you guys, but I feel much less drawn to it.
It's understandable
for sure. Anyways, still playing D&D with the normal humans.
How's that going?
Oh, it's going good, but you know what I forgot to explain? I forgot to explain what I've like. There's so many rules to D&D, and I know roll for initiative is like this thing, but I never really like explained it fully. Like, I told them that's like the beginning of combat, and I played so many games in my life and had such, I have so many, like, it's just like natural to me that like this is a thing, but I never really explained it to them as like, this is what's happening now. This is some real shit. Like, And so like I'm learning how to be a DM because I've never done it before, and I'm learning how to I'm teaching three normal humans,
mm-hmm.
If we have a callback to anything, it's like these guys are level one, level two geeks, like mm-hmm. at tops.
Yeah,
and they're doing this because A, they're bored, and B, they're semi interested, and they want to do something with each other over the internet that's fun.
Yeah.
So I'm
what's the platform you're using?
Okay, so I would love to show you this, Christopher, because it's really great. We're using Roll20.
I've read about that.
I'm not paying for the you can get a premium monthly thing that's only like $5 and you get tons of added features and stuff, but I'm just using the free one.
Yeah.
And you get like tons of maps and tons of games, and like you build your character sheet on the platform, everybody, and then you input like creatures in there. There's a steep learning curve. I had to like watch a bunch of training videos, tutorial videos on how to use the platform. But now that I'm where I'm at, I really know how to use the platform really well. It's very helpful once you learn the things, like completely, like you click a button, it rolls your initiative for your character. You click a button, it rolls your damage dice for that attack. It tells everybody your damage dice for that attack. It has initiative order for all your characters and your monsters. You can build your own maps. You can put in like pre-made
like
maps.
You upload custom maps and stuff. Is that in the program?
There's two fold, which I'm having a lot of fun with. One, you could just find like a map online and just drag and drop it onto page, and then they use that map. But I've been starting to learn how. I found some map templates where they give you like pieces of a map. They give you like a corner.
I need to be doing this. Sounds awesome.
Dude, it's so much fun. I'm having so much fun building maps. Like I am always like I'm a giant geek, but like I never really talk about this stuff. Is like I'm a map geek. I love whenever we go to like a park or something. I always love to get the maps because I love looking at maps. I love map books. I love fantasy maps. I want like a room. Like if I had a dream room, it would be full of fantasy maps.
My favorite part of playing D&D back in the day was creating the dungeon. Yes! I would get the graph paper. I would get the graphing paper, and I would spend hours constructing a cool looking dungeon.
So sign up for a Roll20 thing. Send me the email that you.
All right.
And I'm going to send you an invite to a game, and then I'll just walk you through some stuff. And we
awesome.
I can show, dude, it's so much. It's so fun.
All right, I'll do it.
And I've downloaded. Now I have all these like map. I call them map assets, and it's just like pieces of a map. And it's like, oh, I can put a chest right here and place it on that square. And it's like, oh, there's a little corner here, and there's like a door. I'll put a door right there, you know. But you have to like dig through a bunch of stuff, and it's hours and hours of like making. But like right now, I'm building this crazy dungeon for them, and I don't want to tell them about it because it's a maze, but. Don't listen to this, Hannah. I hope, but it's like it's so much fun. All right,
that's cool. We should do a Brothers Geek.
Andrew, are you willing to make a D&D character?
Of course, I am.
And do you should ask Sean if he wants to do this with us.
Good idea. All right. Sure. We should do it.
All right. I'll be the noob, and you guys can just
We'll explain stuff to you, and like and yeah, I'll definitely have fun.
That sounds fun.
A little gig. Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
And I need to give. Let me give the Gloomhaven update.
Yeah.
Sean and I, we played a scenario, awesome scenario last night. Where?
How long did it take you?
Great question.
One scenario, a little over 3 hours. Plane of the Elements. So the previous session we did, we went through this scenario, and at the end of the scenario, when we get into the scenario, there were dark priests that were opening a portal, and we didn't know where it went or what it was, but we had to disrupt the ritual, right? That was the goal of that scenario. But when we get to the end of that scenario, you're given a choice. Either you can go through the portal or move on to a different sort of scenario, advance the story further, whatever. And Sean and I were in agreement that our group would, we would return to the town, recover, sort of gather our gear, and then go back through the portal.
Okay.
And so we went through the portal last night, and it was at elemental plane. So we fought earth demons, sun demons, and fire demons. And it was very difficult. I think it was the most difficult scenario we've done so far. And we, Sean and I, are, our characters are slowly leveling up, and we're getting better at our using the cards and combinations and sort of group gameplay. And so we're really getting better at it. And so we're pretty good right now. But I came very close. One of my characters came very close to being exhausted, which in the game means you run out of usable cards. And if you run out of usable cards, that character is exhausted, can no longer participate in the scenario. And my damage dealer, Scoundrel, she came very close. She used up her last, well, she had one card left, so she wasn't exhausted at the end, but she used her last two playable cards to when the last demon was killed. And so the goal of that scenario, last night's scenario, was to kill all the enemies, which we did. But then when we finally killed the enemies, a voice came down in our heads saying, you people are actually more powerful than I thought. You might be useful to me. And so you and the choice that we were presented at the end of the scenario was A, go retrieve this thing for me, or die right now.
Oh shit.
Oh shit.
And Sean and I, and then there was a portal that opened up in front of us. And so Sean was like, no, we are not going to be the errand boys for this, the demon prince. We are going after the demon prince.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
So the our next scenario is we've only had one boss fight so far. Our next scenario is we go through a dungeon to get to and fight the demon prince. He's a boss. So we're very, very excited about it.
When is your next planned session?
Hopefully next weekend, because our next scenario is to fight the demon prince, and he seems like a total badass. We are psyched about it.
Oh, exciting. My God. Thank you for the update.
That's so funny.
I want a play by play of how that.
Oh, my God. We will. I will. It was so, we had such a good time last night.
That's awesome.
And I drank a lot of scotch.
That's the thing. Like, that's the thing, is like, Andrew, we played D&D and we played for 3 hours. Like,
oh yeah,
it's easily like, yeah, I mean, yeah, we did two maps and a couple of fights, and it was 3 hours.
It was so fun.
A lot of it is just like run around and ask questions.
Leave me,
and like,
take me inside.
All right, we'll do it.
Cool.
I'll send you some articles you need to read.
Okay. Sean is actually the timing of this might work, because Sean, he's down with coming on to do the Gloomhaven update. And so if we run the Demon Prince scenario and then do the podcast, Sean can come on and we can talk about what we did.
Yeah. Perfect. I thought he was going to come on this week. I mean, it's obviously Easter.
Yeah, not this week.
Family.
I'm down. Like, let's do it.
But definitely invite him for next time. Cause
I've already planted the seed with him.
Yeah. So. Cool. Andrew.
Yeah.
Do you have any trivia for us this week?
I do. Mm. And it came out of our discussion actually earlier, so it'll just be a nice illuminative thing. According to boxofficemojo.com, what are the top, their classification, genre, post-apocalypse, top five post-apocalypse films in terms of box office?
Oh, in terms of box office.
And their definition of post-apocalypse?
Do they have a definition of it? That's a good question. I don't think they do.
I mean,
Matrix has to be in that top five.
Whoa, okay. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Any other guesses?
This is top five. So, I mean, it's got to be like.
Well, we can expand it to top 10, but yeah. Top 10.
But like, Mad Max Fury Road has got to be on there.
Yes. Yeah.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, is that post-apocalypse?
Think of box office. This is
box office.
Box office.
Blade Runner 2049.
Post-apocalyptic.
There's a big hole in your...
What are we missing?
You guys are missing something huge.
What are we missing?
And as soon as I say it, it'll make total sense to you.
Yes.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the top 10. Lifetime gross.
Okay.
According to boxofficemojo.com. Number 10 is Mad Max Fury Road.
Wow.
153 million. The Matrix with 171 million. This one, I kind of question the definition of post-apocalypse, but it's on the list. World War Z. Kind of in the process of the apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. That's not post.
Yeah.
That's,
202 million. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, Planet of the Apes, yeah.
208 million. I Am Legend with 256.
Okay.
The Matrix Reloaded at 281 million. That's number five.
Whoa.
And the top four post-apocalypse movies are The Hunger Games.
Hunger Games, yeah.
Oh, that's dystopic future. That's not post.
I don't know. Yeah, that's not post-apocalypse.
Yeah, your list is wrong.
I agree. I question the methodology of this bullshit.
So, Mockingjay Part 2 and Mockingjay Part 1 are 4 and 3, respectively. The Mockingjay Part 2 made $281 million. Mockingjay Part 1 made $337 million. The first Hunger Games movie made $408 million.
Dystopic future. Not
post-apocalypse.
Post-apocalypse and is like...
Think about... But this
guy
is
on the road, like, looking for food.
Society's over.
Catching fire with 400... Think about the fact that Francis
Book of
Morris,
Eli...
Book, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the definition is too broad, but I think that in terms of post-apocalyptic / dystopic futures, there's Catching Fire is absolutely in that genre, and we completely didn't think about it.
But they're
quality films. But I mean,
they are
of varying degrees. Catching Fire is actually a really good movie, I think.
So
I like them all.
Yeah. I like them all too.
Yeah,
they might be worth a rewatch.
Excellent. I mean, all arguments against whether the definition of post-apocalyptic movie aside, good job, Andrew. Good list. Good trivia. If you'd like to help
like
Andrew
it.
With his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. Email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek at twitter.com. Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook. Brothers Geek do stuff on Instagram, Spotify.
Once the quarantine's lifted, guys, the Brothers Geek will be doing more things in the world.
Yes.
So you'll see
We're not actually doing like real things.
I will post. I'll send you a picture of my Gloomhaven setup. How about that?
Send me a picture of that. I'll post that.
I'll send you a picture of my D&D.
Yes.
Page.
Absolutely. Right. We'll post that on our Instagram.
I'll send you the photo of the Gloomhaven setup.
Okay, very cool.
Follow us on that and Spotify and iTunes. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you.
We appreciate it. Stay safe.
Be safe.
Stay healthy.
Yep.
Be well.
Yep, be well.
Live long and prosper.